Morning. We are looking at Noah and God saying, I will remember. And God has provided the weather to help us with a visual aid about what Noah was going on with. The 40 days of rain that led to the flood. But we've got a promise within that we're going to hold on to. We're going to read Genesis 8, all of 8, and then some of chapter 9. So bear with me, buckle in. I'm going to read fairly quickly because time is tight. But God remembered Noah and all the wild animals and the livestock that were with him and in the ark. And he sent a wind over the earth and the waters receded. Now the springs of the deep and the floodgates of the heavens had been closed and the rain had stopped falling from the sky. The water receded steadily from the earth. And at the end of 150 days, the water had gone down, and on the 17th day of the 7th month, the ark came to rest on the mountains of Ararat. The waters continued to recede until the 10th month, and on the first day of the 10th month, the top of the mountains became visible. After 40 days, Noah opened the window he had made in the ark and sent out a raven, and it kept flying back and forth until the water had dried up from the earth. Then he sent out a dove to see if the water had receded from the surface of the ground. But the dove could find no place to set its feet because there was water all over the surface of the earth. So he returned to Noah in the ark. He reached out his hand and took the dove and brought it back to himself in the ark. He waited 7 more days and sent out the dove from the ark. When the dove returned to him in the evening, there in its beak was a freshly plucked olive leaf. Then Noah knew the water had receded from the earth. He waited 7 more days and sent the dove out again, and this time it did not return to him. By the first day of the first month of Noah's 601st year, the water had dried up from the earth. Noah removed the covering from the ark and saw that the surface of the ground was dry. By the 27th day of the second month, the earth was completely dry. Then God said to Noah, come out of the ark, you, your wife, and your sons and their wives. Bring out every kind of living creature that is with you, and the birds and the animals and all the creatures that move along the ground, so they can multiply on the earth and be fruitful in increasing number upon it. So Noah came out, and together with his sons and his wife and his son's wife, all the animals and all the creatures that move along the ground and all the birds and everything that moves on the earth came out of the ark, one kind after another. Then Noah built an altar to the Lord, and taking some of the clean animals and clean birds, he sacrificed burnt offerings on it. The Lord smelled the pleasing aroma and said in his heart, never again will I curse the ground because man, even though every inclination of his heart is evil from childhood, and never again will I destroy all living creatures as I have done. As long as the earth endures, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, summer and winter, day and night will never cease. Then we're moving to 9 verse 12. And God said, this is a sign of a covenant I am making between you and every living creature with you, a covenant for all generations to come. I've set my rainbow in the clouds, and it will be a sign of the covenant between me and the earth. Whenever I bring clouds over the earth and the rainbow appears in the clouds, I will remember my covenant between me and you and all living creatures of every kind. Never again will the waters become a flood to destroy all life. Whenever the rainbow appears in the clouds, I will see it, and remember the everlasting covenant between God and all living creatures of every kind on the earth. So God said to Noah, this is the sign of the covenant I have established between me and all life on earth. My glasses aren't good enough for me to see down there. And instead of having to go up and down like this, I'm going to just move this here. So, you've been doing a series. You've looked at God created and God saw that it was good. That he gave mankind free will and provision. And that we messed up again and again and again to the point where God was grieved. Not angry or vindictive, but grieved. Which brings us today and God remembers. So a quick recap of the story of Noah to this point. 500-year-old Noah and his sons found favor with God. Noah was considered to be a righteous man who was blameless amongst the people. The rest of the world was corrupt and full of violence. God determined to destroy the earth and all the people. He commanded Noah to build an ark, which he did, and it took him 100 years to do. Then the 600-year-old Noah and his wife and their sons and their wives got in the ark. God sent the animals to come. Then the Lord shut the ark's door. The flood started with the waters from above and below, which caused the flooding of the earth and the rising of the waters to 20 feet over the mountaintops. And then we hit chapter 8. So brief recap what we've read today. When we look at the Hebrew, when we look at the Old Testament, in fact, when we look at the Bible, there are patterns and trends that appear in it. One of these ways that that God allowed for an oral tradition to remember the story is called a chiastic structure. Okay. A chiastic structure is a bit like going up a mountain and coming down to it. And the Noah story is a classic example of a chiastic structure. I'm hoping you can read that. The colours stand out. But we've got the bottom, Noah and his sons in Genesis 6:9, and we end the story with Noah and his sons in Genesis 9:18. Genesis 6:12, the corruption of all flesh. Genesis 9:16, the covenant with all flesh. Genesis 6:13, God's resolution to destroy the earth. Genesis 8:21, God's resolution to never destroy the earth again. Genesis 7:17, the flooding of the earth. Genesis 8:13, the drying of the earth. The rising of the waters, the recession of the waters. And the peak of this chiastic structure is the most important part of that story. God builds up and he builds it down. And the most important bit, the verse that God wants us to focus on, is I will remember. God remembered Noah. And that is the pinnacle of this story. That's the important bit and the bit we need to hold on to. The upside of this structure is about judgment. The downside is about mercy. Micah 6:8, God says, I've shown you, a man, what is good, and what does the Lord require of you? But to act justly, to love mercy, and then to walk humbly, because we're not God. But God shows us that demonstration. He shows there is justice, and then there is mercy. Summer 2012, the plough in Cadston, Buckinghamshire, hit the headlines. It hit the headlines because in the spring of that year, it came out that David and Samantha Cameron left Chequers and went to the pub for a drink with their family, and they forgot their daughter, Nancy. When we hear phrases like God remembered, we can overlay the divine with our human weakness. A bit like Valerie forgetting what she needed to do today or who might be where. It could be like me forgetting why I went upstairs this morning, Valerie. We can overlay that and God, and we can have this image of God going to the kitchen and saying, Jesus, Jesus, why did I go in the kitchen? And it's not like that. When it says that God remembered, it's not that God forgets. It's not like he doesn't know what's going on. When we think about or hear God remembered, it means something else. With the Camerons, when you unpick the story, it's slightly different. It's not like the 86-year-old French man who stopped off at a motorway service station, got back in his car and drove 200 kilometres before he realised he left his wife at the service station. For the Camerons, they were in a number of cars. David went off with his security and he thought that Nancy was with Samantha. Samantha went off with the other children and thought Nancy was with David. A bit like Jesus and Mary and Joseph. Mary thinks that he's with Joseph and Joseph thinks he's with Mary. But Genesis 8:1, when God remembers, it is God bringing back into his mind with intent the thought about Noah. God remembered not just Noah, but God remembered his covenant in showing the sign of the rainbow. He remembered Abraham after the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. He remembered Rachel when she was barren. He remembered the covenant with Abraham in the release of the people of Israel from Egypt. When God remembers, it is about bringing to mind the covenant he has made with us to say, it is you and me. I am bringing it to my mind. I am placing you in my mind. When I prepare any sermon, I make a habit at the very beginning, before I read the scripture, to say, God, what do I need to remember from this account? What do I need to bring to mind from this account? What is it that you want to be passed over as the word for this moment in time? And when I was preparing this, while we were looking at remembering, there were two accounts, two bits of this story that wouldn't let go, God wouldn't let go of. So I just want to share them with you because I think this is what God wants you to hear. Noah built an ark. Noah didn't build a ship or a boat. Moses, writing down the Pentateuch, used the word boat as a boat at the end of Genesis and again in Deuteronomy. But he didn't use the word boat here. He used the word ark. And what makes an ark not a boat? The other occasion an ark is used in the Old Testament is Moses' basket. So the basket that Moses was put in, the ark that Noah was put in, are the only occasions that Hebrew word for ark are used. It was an ark because there was no source of power. There was no sails. There was no oars. There was even no harness to put on a whale. And there was no method for direction. There was no rudder. This was a floating container. It was there to keep them dry from the waters above and the waters below. And in that container, God placed the hope for the future. But Noah, no matter how hard he worked within that ark, could not control where it ended up. He couldn't control where it landed. Nothing he did changed where they got to. Both those examples of an ark hold a promise for the future. Moses' basket held the freedom for the people and the route to the promised land. Noah's ark held the hope for the world and the repopulation of the earth. The door of that ark was closed by God, and the door of that ark was opened by God. God placed his hope in and closed the door. It landed on Ararat, and God opened the door to let the hope out. As believers, we are sometimes aware of the ark we are in, and other times we're completely unaware until we arrive there. If God knows the plans he has for you, then we're being led somewhere. You may feel that you're doing it under your own power, but no matter how hard you work, you don't change the direction that God is taking you in. You cannot power where you're getting to. You cannot change where God's destination for you is. One of the examples that we have as an ark today is here. The church. God has placed you in an ark, the hope for the people of Woodside. As Baptists, we're clear that Christ is the head of the church. We don't follow the leanings of man. We follow the mind of Christ. We have church meetings to seek out the mind of Christ and the direction that Christ is calling you as a church to. He brings those who he needs to achieve his will into this place. You may feel that, or you may be serving. You may be part of the mission of the church. You may feel like you're dealing with grumpy animals that sometimes make a bit of a mess. But it's God that powers the church. It's God who directs the church, and our role is continue the work and work together and sometimes struggle with those people you're put in the ark with until God lets you out. Next week in your visions and values service, you're seeking the mind of Christ. Are you prepared to accept that your thoughts may not be God's thoughts? Are you prepared to accept that God may be saying something to you you don't want to hear? Because it's God who's in control. Or are you trying to power and direct this ark yourself? The second bit that stood out for me were the birds. Noah let out two birds. He let out the unclean raven and the clean dove. The raven flew around and it didn't come back. And why didn't it come back? Because there was enough destruction and death and carrion for it to feed on. Wherever it looked, it found somewhere it could feed on. The rotting, putrid flesh. The dove went out and it looked for life. And it came back because there was no life to be found. And then it went out again and came back with a sign of life. In every situation that we face in our lives, we can let out the two birds. We can choose which one we follow and which one we feast with. If we choose to look for despair, for others getting it wrong, for fault, for blame, for gossip, for lies, for slander, for greed, for malice, for death and destruction, you can find it. If you choose to follow the raven, it doesn't help you and it doesn't grow the kingdom. Or you can choose to follow the dove and look for life. You can focus on the whatevers of Philippians 4:8. Whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable. If anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. Just like you've got the chiasm, there's another literary device in Hebrew called the parallelism, which, to reinforce a point, the concept is repeated. These occur normally in a single passage. So in Genesis 1, first day, light and dark, fourth day, sun and moon. Second day, air and water. Fifth day, water-based life and air-based life. Third day, the land is brought out. Sixth day, the land animals come out. And we see these parallels coming. But God isn't limited to doing it in a passage, and he can do it across the Old Testament and the New Testament. Moses' first public miracle was turning water to blood. Jesus' first public miracle was turning water to wine. The last plague of Moses was the bringing death and destruction, the Passover. Jesus' last public miracle was to bring freedom on a cross at Passover. And there's a parallelism with the dove as well. We look at the dove of Noah and we look at the dove of Jesus' baptism. Noah comes out of the water and releases a dove. And the dove comes back with a sign of life. Jesus comes out of the water and God sends the dove and says, this is life. This is the sign of life that you've been looking for. You can see the impact of the dove's presence with Jesus as he dealt with the religious leaders who released the raven in the stories in the gospel. Their focus in the gospel is, how do I make this person feel guilt and shame, worthlessness, and make them far from God? And Jesus, carrying the dove, brought freedom, worth, value, love, and peace. Do we choose to follow the example of the religious leaders and release the raven, or do we choose to follow the example of Christ and look for the dove, to look for the good, to look for hope, to look for goodness, to look for potential? These words, I think, well, they were important, they were highlighted to me, and I think they were for you, but actually, I've used them five times this week in pastoral conversations and chats with people at work. The illustration has power because it's come from God. But getting to the covenant and the remembrance. In Genesis 6:5, before the flood, God looked out and it says, God saw how great the wickedness of human race had become on the earth, and that every inclination of the thoughts of the human heart was only evil all the time. Genesis 8:21. Noah has come out and sacrificed on the altar. And God says, never again will I curse the ground because of humans, even though every inclination of the human heart is evil from childhood. Never again will I destroy all living creatures as I've done. Nothing changed. The inclination of the human heart remained evil. Noah took into the ark him, his sons' wives and his wife, and all the animals. But he also took into the ark sin. It wasn't a fresh start because sin went with them. The inclination of the human heart was there. It didn't get lost in the flood. They carried it with them. But it changed. Nothing changed, but everything changed. When we accept Christ, nothing changes, but everything changes. We remain who we are, but we're never the same again. Our hope isn't in our ability to remember God. Our hope is in his refusal to forget us. The difference between a covenant and a contract is about the unconditional commitment of a covenant against the conditional exchange of a contract. God never makes a contract with us. He makes a covenant with us. In Genesis 9, God establishes a covenant with Noah, which serves as the model of this unconditional grace-based commitment, distinct from a mere contractual agreement. It wasn't, what can I get? But God said, I'm giving myself to you unconditionally. And he entered that formal relationship with Noah and all living creatures, promising that despite humanity's corruption, he will never again flood the earth. He will instead preserve the world as he works towards keeping his promise to rescue humanity and creation through the offspring of the woman, which was in Genesis 3:15. But he asked humanity to partner with him in filling and ruling the world. And God's covenant with Noah was to us as well. It was to Noah, but to all humanity, to all mankind, from that point onwards. It wasn't just to the Jews, it wasn't just to Noah, but it was to humanity. And he accompanied his promise with a sign of his faithfulness, the rainbow. Now, rainbow in Hebrew doesn't exist. We translate it as a rainbow, but it doesn't exist in a rainbow. And because it doesn't exist in the Hebrew, actually, what the word we translate as rainbow is a warbow. And when God says, I have put a sign in the sky to show you the covenant promise, what he's doing is showing a bow that is not pointed down at man as the judgment, but upwards to the heavens, to God. This sign that we look at, this sign that causes us to remember this promise, is about God saying, it's me taking it. The covenant promise in Eden was, you will have life. The condition was, don't touch the tree. There's no condition on this covenant because God is taking that with him. But there is another covenant in the same way, that the arrow pointing to the heavens is fulfilled. This other covenant also has a parallelism with the Noah story. Noah, his name means rest. And that name of rest has a significance. In this story, God grieved the status of humanity. He looked out for hope and identified how he would save humanity through the son of woman. He took Noah and placed him as the hope for the future in the wooden vessel. Noah had no control, because God was in control. No matter what he did in the ark, it was rest. Nothing he did would change the direction. The ark landed, and a new creation was released from a wooden vessel. Noah made a sacrifice to God, who had remembered, and entered a covenant with mankind. The parallel covenant is the one that we celebrated earlier with the bread and the wine. Another symbol that God says to look at and remember. God came in human form. God looked out at the state of humanity, looked for hope in order to save humanity, and decided the time had come for the Creator to enter the creation. He came in the human form, and in Matthew 11:28, in Eugene Peterson's Message version, Jesus says, "Are you tired, worn out, burned out on religion? Come to me, get away with me, and you'll recover your life. I'll show you how to take real rest. Walk with me and work with me. Watch how I do it. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting on you. Keep company with me and you'll learn to live freely and lightly." Jesus came to bring rest. In the Holy Week, Jesus approached Jerusalem and grieved over Jerusalem. On Maundy Thursday, Jesus went to the garden and grieved, saying, "My soul is overwhelmed to the point of death." On a wooden vessel, our hope was contained in the broken body and the shed blood, which points to the sacrifice that was made on this altar. The result of that sacrifice was God giving us a new covenant. The price has been paid. No amount of work on our part will change what Jesus has done. He has done it all. We cannot add to that or take anything from it. Anyone who calls on the name of God, on the name of Christ, is adopted as a child of God, is a new creation. That is the covenant that this sign and this sign point to. In the same way that God remembered Noah, God remembers you. He has a covenant with you. He knows your name. He holds your name, and he calls us to do this as we remember him. Amen.